Okay, reading from the Bhakti Sutras, Narada Bhakti Sutra, text 47. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yo Vivittasthanam Sevateyo Lokabandham Unmulayati Nishtray Gunyo Bhavati Yo Yoga Shemam Tyajati. Who can cross beyond illusion? That person who stays in a secluded place, cuts off his root, at the root is attachment to mundane society, becomes free from the influence of the three modes of nature, and gives up hankering for material gain and security. Purport, Narada is giving more ways to cross beyond Maya. The first is solitude, vivikta sthanam sevate. Several times in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advises that one practice spiritual life alone. Solitude is particularly a stress in meditative yoga, which requires that one live alone in a secluded place. Rahasi stita ekaki, Bhagavad Gita 6:10. And in the 13th chapter, when listing the items of knowledge, Lord Krishna includes vivikta desha sevatvam, aspiring to live in a holy place, Bhagavad Gita 13:11. Again, in the 18th chapter, when describing a person who has been elevated to the position of self-realization, Lord Krishna says that he lives in a solitary place, vivikta sevi, Bhagavad Gita 18:52. Neophyte devotees, however, are not advised to live alone. Although solitary bhajan was practiced by Namacharya Haridas Thakur and sometimes by Lord Chaitanya, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur criticized devotees who prematurely wanted to chant in a solitary place. He wrote, "My dear Mai, why are you so proud of being a Vaishnava? Your solitary worship and chanting of the holy name of the Lord are based on a desire for cheap popularity. And therefore, your chanting of the holy name is only a pretension," quoted in Krishna, page 882. A sacred and solitary place, as mentioned in the Gita, also refers to a place of pilgrimage. Srila Prabhupada writes, "In India, the yogis, the transcendentalists of the devotees, all leave home and reside in sacred places such as Prayag, Mathura, Vrindavan, Rishikesh, and Hardwar, and in solitude practice yoga where the sacred rivers like the Jamuna and the Ganges flow." Bhagavad Gita 6:11 purport. For devotees of Krishna, the most sacred place of pilgrimage is Mathura Mandala, the district that includes Mathura and Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami recommends living in Mathura Mandala as one of the five main principles of Bhakti Yoga. And Srila Prabhupada praises Mathura Mandala as follows in his summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. "A pure devotee of Lord Krishna resides in the district of Mathura or Vrindavan and visits all the places where Krishna's pastimes were performed. Actually, if someone goes to Vrindavan, he will immediately feel separation from Krishna, perform such nice activities when he was present there." The Nectar of Devotion, page 139. So that's halfway through the purport, but we'll begin speaking. Let me get some cough drops here. Om Jnana Simaram Dasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Kafitam yena bhutale sayam rupa kadamayam sadati sa padantikam pancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayevaja patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasude Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. Yesterday was the disappearance festival, Tirubhav Mahotsava of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I went to Govardhan with his Pushpa Samadhi. His Pushpa Samadhi is there to honor the function. Quite a few people there, including a few people from China, maybe 25 people from China, which is his credit that he opened up that preaching field. And, you know, it's beautiful now in Vrindavan. I mean, weather can't be more ideal. Such a nice, wonderful atmosphere and people coming, and I do my service of trying to host people in the Holy Dham and give class. We're actually discussing Anjalila. I'm very, very excited to share that with the devotees who come on the Sunday Sangha also. Now we're in the Narada Bhakti Sutras, and we're, I know, plodding along, but we're already halfway finished. And we're talking about how to attain bhakti. And one must attract the mercy of God or a great soul. So again, that concept is there. It's mercy that it's undeserved. But mercy can be attracted by a kind of attitude. Kindness can be attracted. Blessings beyond your effort can come. But mercy comes from a person. And Prabhupada says, you're reading this purport in Anjalila yesterday, it's very apropos here, that Krishna is responsive. And that's the essence of bhakti. You need mercy to attain bhakti, because how can you achieve God? God is unlimitedly valuable, and we are infinitesimal. If we actually meditate on it, we're particle of consciousness, and practically everything else comes from God. Whatever qualities we have now. So how can we pay for something by our work or effort? But because one of the wonderful attributes of God, Nirapadi Karunena Si Sachinanda, is his Nirapadi, his mercy that has no bounds. And you combine that with the fact that Krishna is responsive. In Anjalila, we're discussing that. Tesham Satati Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Bhuti Yogam Twam Yena Mam Upayantite Dadami Buddhi Yogam Dvam. Krishna is responsive. He gives to who? Heshang Satata Yuktanam Vajitam Pittipu. For one who worships him, Tesham Satatam Yuktanam, always, Pitti Purvakam, and with love. If you serve someone, Ahoitaki Apatiyata, without motive and without love, you will win their hearts. And if you win their hearts, everything within their hearts will come out. And this is the whole process of bhakti. Why, if you want bhakti, you have to surrender. And surrender, sharanagata, doesn't mean by force, it means by love. You found shelter, you take shelter. I'm just going to look up something for a second here. I don't know what I've read in the class that I give every day, but Bori John Prabhu in a class, a beautiful point, he said, if you deal with an exalted person in a way that their hearts melt, everything will come out. We're discussing in the Antilila Srila Rupa Goswami. And it's very, very wonderful with Srila Rupa Goswami. Very, very wonderful with Srila Rupa Goswami. His depth of understanding of the heart of Lord Chaitanya and his ability to express that heart, which is the separation and mood of the residents of Vrindavan, specifically Radharani, was so astounding that Ramananda Roy, who was in all aspects a great knower of Nataka Shastra, Sahitya Darpan, the Shastra of poetry, when he heard Rupa Goswami's poetry, he proclaimed, he started to glorify him as if he had five mouths. And that's significant because how expert is Rupa Goswami? How expert is Ramananda Roy? When someone who glorifies you for something is themselves expert in that something, then that's really a praise. And then he looked at Lord Chaitanya and he said, and Rupa Goswami, he was so astounded, he said, what is the use of a bowman's arrow and a poet's words? They don't pierce the heart and make the heart spin. And then he said, this can only be a result of your mercy. And Lord Chaitanya responded, he pleased me by his quality. He pleased me by his qualities. Think of a subordinate, a person who's subordinate to you, that you have that relationship with. What are the qualities in that person that please you? It's love, which is manifest in a certain type of respect, a certain desire to please, a surrender to your desires, which are to help the person. And if the person does that, your heart melts. And whatever you have to give them, you would gladly bestow upon them. In fact, they can win their heart in such a way that you can become captured by their affection. I know as a somewhat of a spiritual guide in different things, I know how that dynamic works. how the heart is moved by a person's surrender and service, and how much you can give to a person whom you have that relationship with. And then I look above to Prabhupada and see his own heart melted by the humility and service of devotees like Jayananda. I was there when Prabhupada came to Vrindavan to leave the world, came to stay and to prepare to leave the world. He told us that, but he was talking about Jayananda. And Jayananda was an emblem of humility. Humility and service and love, you cannot separate them. Because humility means that you're no longer interested in being in the center. That's what humility means. And you have no hesitation. Just one second here. Just going to do something. One second. So, Rupa Goswami was humble because he had no desire to be in the center and didn't feel qualified to be so. And no one is qualified to be in the center because only God is in the center. So he was happy in that way, and therefore can enter into the world of God for service. And therefore, when someone has that level of love, they can invoke such a trust in one that one will give them their heart, including their most intimate details of what that heart is. And that's what happened to Rupa Goswami. Well, he pleased me by his qualities. And therefore, he was empowered. And this is how the process of bhakti works. So, you got to get that mercy. And to attract this mercy, we have to give up our egocentric and materialistic qualities. And that's what was described in the last thing that we discussed. How you have to be very careful with your heart if you want to enter into the process of bhakti, and where you open your heart to. Because if you open your heart to objects and people who have the intention to be in the center, then you'll be susceptible to all the qualities that are a result of that decision in consciousness, which is lust and anger and confusion. And because we've been in this world so long, we have unlimited samskaras and attractions for asat, for untruth. And if we open ourselves up to them, then some samskaras can be activated. And when the samskaras for desire and selfish desire are activated, they lead to frustration because we're not the controllers, so we never can fulfill all our desires. And frustration and anger lead to confusion and bewilderment. So, the question is how to overcome this ocean of Maya or illusion of the sat when we are situated in a world that very much is in the forms and shapes and sounds of the sat, and when our consciousness is so attracted to them. So the answer was, you have to surrender. And the first thing you have... The first thing you have to surrender is the bad association. You have to give up the satya, a sat sangatyag, a Vaishnavachar. The behavior of the Vaishnava is he gives up the things and the people and the objects, or the intimacy with them, or the approach to them that opens one up to their intentions and qualities. And to give strength, he serves the great devotees who can powerfully imprint in one's heart the desire for truth. And one consciously situates himself away from that self-centered position. The consciousness view of looking at things as objects for one's desire and the attachment and the manipulation, Vaishnava becomes very, very simple. And thus very, very happy in Krishna consciousness. So we're discussing the qualities of one who surrenders, because it's difficult, it's impossible to overcome Krishna's illusory potency, the combination of the world and the modes in our consciousness. So it's really very, very difficult to conquer them by our own power, from the platform of Buddhi alone. This is wrong. I will control myself. One really has to get a feel for truth. And that happens when one surrenders to God. I think in the last class, Mahamuni was discussing, you know, three levels of ethics. You can do what's right without knowing it. You can do what's right because you know it. And then you can do what's right because you like to do what's right. So there has to be this shift of surrender. Because surrender means I want truth. That's what surrender means. Surrender means I will take shelter of God. God is great. I'm dependent on God. You take shelter of truth. You declare to God by the voice of surrender, I want truth. I want to see God. And I want to have that vision where I fully understand that I'm a particle of consciousness. And I'm part of something greater. And I'm meant to serve that something greater. And I want to see it. Where if you're unsurrendered, why? Because you don't want to be what you are, is a part of God. And God fulfills that desire by blinding us to God and blinding us to ourselves as servants of God. It becomes easy when you surrender, you make that shift. That's the core of bhakti. That's where it actually begins. When you surrender. Tadvidi paripatena paripashnena sevaya upadeshanti te gyanam gyaninas tata. Just try to approach the truth. Approach a teacher, tattva-darshan, who sees the truth. Serve, surrender, and inquire. Self-realized soul can impart knowledge to you because he has seen the truth. Paripratena, you surrender. So, now he's going to give other things. And that's the verse today. One who serves in a secluded place. So what's the concept? The concept is we create our environments based on the egotistical, unsurrendered consciousness that I am the controller and enjoyer. And our environment is as much as possible, if one doesn't create that environment in a devotional mood, in terms of service to Krishna, the environment is created to satisfy the present illusory conceptions one has, and I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. That's the purpose of real deity worship. And we all know it. We know it when a house is centered on the deity, when the house is centered on Krishna. The question is whether everything is living in your house or you're living in the house of God. Where everything is living in your world or you're living in the world of God. So, secluded place means generally people were so entangled that when they became interested in spiritual life and meditation, which had to be free from any stimulation of one's samskaras based on ego, one would go to a secluded place. Or one would travel and experience God's creation. What was the purpose of sannyas? That when you travel, you don't have time to set up the environment in terms of your ego and your desires. You become less attached to it. But here, in the purport, it says that there's another foilable, is that the right word? There's another difficulty that people go into solitude with the purpose of ego. It's just another way of getting people to respect them. Get another way to have people see oneself as their, see themselves as superior, as a great Vaishnav. So if one does it in that consciousness, the opposite effect happens. And therefore recommends the Dham. And what the Dham is, it's an environment where everything is intensely moving for the service of Krishna. Krishna is so prominently in the center in the Dham that you can't live here. in that egotistical consciousness. And if you do, you will suffer. Because it's not a place to satisfy your desires. It's a place to serve Krishna. So, one who serves and uproots his attachment to the world becomes free from the three modes of nature. And what are the modes of nature? They're the voices. They're the voices of I am the enjoyer, am I the controller in various ways. There's one voice that says, I am the controller, and I want to do nothing. There's the other voice of passion, I am the controller, and I want more, better things. And another one is subtle, if one's attached to the mode of goodness, of course it's enlightening. I'm the controller, I am peaceful. Anyway, the modes are voices within the heart based on our samskaras, and they're objects that announce, enjoy me, you can be this, you know, enjoy me, you can do nothing, embrace this environment, you don't have to do anything, or you can do too much. So those are certain dictate voices. And freedom from the modes means you no longer listen to those voices. You listen to the dictates of service. You see what a devotee is? He's listening to what Krishna wants and the dictates of service that are expressed in the Shastra, that come through his heart and the super soul, that are expressed by the Guru and the Vaishnavas and his own conscience. And then the other thing is, and one who gives up acquisition and security. And basically it means is when you are seeking truth, you take only what you need for the pursuit of truth. And your endeavor is minimal. Does it mean you have to renounce things? It means you take as much as you need. Kamasinandriyapriti labo jivati yavata. Yavata, you take as much as you need. When Boris John said this, gave commentary on this verse, it made an impression in me. He said, you don't live to enjoy, you enjoy to live. You don't live to eat, you eat to live. So you take as much as necessary. And you give up that desire for over-endeavoring for your own security or over-endeavoring for your own upliftment. You're concentrated on your service to God with the faith that God will reciprocate and protect you. With the faith that in the shelter of God, you are maintained and protected. And the most important thing is maintained and protected, which is your heart and your desire to actually have that heart filled with love. There is no shelter unless you have that. You may have all money, all power, the opposite sex and power, prestige, fame, etc. But you do not have shelter unless you have a relationship that fills your heart with love. That's the main shelter. And when that object is God, it's merciful and all-powerful. Again, Borjan Prabhu described this. If someone is not kind, they won't help you. And if they're not all-powerful, they can't. The shelter of God means that You have the shelter of someone who is merciful and will help you, who wants to help you, and one who is all-powerful and can. Okay, we'll read on. Srila Prabhupada worked hard for many years to establish temples in Vrindavan and in Mayapur, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, so that Westerners could come and be purified by living in the Dham of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada states, purport by Satsrut Maharaj, the place in the 84 square mile district of Mathura are so beautifully situated on the bank of the river Jamuna that anyone who goes there will never want to return to this material world. Transcendental feelings are immediately are aroused immediately without fail after one arrives at Mathura or Vrindavan, the Nectar of Devotion 111. The essential benefit of a solitary place is that it provides freedom from worldly people and passions. For devotees, this can be best situated in the Dham and the association of like-minded people. So it's no doubt that Prabhupada spent a lot of effort establishing the Dhams, and many, many people take shelter of the Dhams. And I'm seeing people come here, and it is their shelter. It is the one place where they can feel fully happy. I've seen that. And I've seen people just somehow or other, even if they come here for a week, you know, that becomes their objective, that atmosphere. Their atmosphere where things are moving towards God. And if you have the slight desire to do so, you also start to move to God. And the abundance of reciprocation of love and devotion in your heart. Narada also says that one who wants to overcome Maya must break the bonds of material attachment and live above the lows. These are some of the natural results of a Krishna conscious life. In the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes how the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, bind the living entity in samsara. To become free of the modes, one has to hear the truth from the spiritual master, and one will gradually understand his original spiritual nature and how one is entrapped by the modes. So you get knowledge and you understand. You can make distinction. First of all, you can understand that you should be listening to the dictates of God to serve God, because that is our constitutional position. And then you learn how to distinguish and understand what that desire. Then one will gradually, if one lives in the association of transcendentalists and serves Krishna along with them, one will not be controlled by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Because transcendentalist means that their desire to serve is so strong that you actually begin to realize the beauty and attractiveness of that. And you begin to appreciate and value that. And then those sentiments begin to come into your heart. And that's how you transcend the modes. The modes are dictating selfishness. If you develop an attitude for service, then you neglect the modes. The modes can only affect you if you are attached to them and therefore focus your consciousness on them. And what is transcendental? The modes may be moving, but one does not react to them. Especially if one's consciousness is fixed on service and devotion, then one won't unnecessarily sleep. One won't become unnecessarily agitated sensually, because there's this other objective that's absorbing your consciousness, which is Krishna and your attraction for Krishna, and therefore your desire to serve Krishna. And therefore, those things will recede to the background. They may be there, but you can observe them. Where if the desire for service and surrender is not prominent, and one hasn't made that shift to put Krishna and one's guru in the center of their life, then one's own ego will become prominent. Acharyas tell us that living in the forest is the mode of goodness, living in the town is the mode of passion, and living in a brothel is the mode of ignorance. But to live in a temple of Vishnu in the society of devotees is Vaikuntha. Indeed, another meaning of secluded and sacred place is the temple of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes, in the Bhakti system, the temple is considered the sacred place. The temple is Nirguna, transcendental, the path of perfection. In Vrindavan, everything is centered around the temple. Everyone lives near the temple. And it has a powerful effect on the consciousness. Because when you go in that temple, the deities are so beautiful. The kirtan is so heartfelt in glorification of Krishna that you enter into that energy. And you get solace from the petty desires that come into your heart that are trying to constantly move you into the center and move everything else in a position for you to enjoy it. You enter into the temple, you enter into the desire and will of the Supreme Lord. And you become focused on that, on glorifying God. Nanda also recommends renouncing anxieties for acquisition and maintenance, yoga, kshema, chajati. Lord Krishna also mentions yoga, kshema in the Bhagavad Gita. Ananyas chintiyanto mam yejana paryupasate tesham nitya bhyuktanam yoga, kshema, dhamyam. For those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So you hear the verses, you don't have to be worried about acquisition and maintenance. If you take shelter of Krishna, what you need he will give, and what you need he will protect. So you don't have to worry about those things if you're actually surrendered. Because surrender gives you faith. Saranagata is faith. What? Faith in what? Krishna as the shelter. Dependence on the Lord for maintenance is an advanced stage of spiritual life, but it is not based on imagination. The principle is that one should not want more than what is absolutely necessary. Wanting anything beyond that will simply cause anxiety. Because what's necessary, God provides. And everything else, then you provide. So you're in anxiety because you're not the controller. God is the controller. So if he provides you the maintenance and he provides you what you need, he can also preserve that. You don't have to worry about it because it didn't come by your effort and it won't go by your effort. It won't go by anybody else's effort. But anything beyond that, you're on your own. In any case, whether one is a poor Brahmin, a mendicant sannyasi, a businessman, or an administrator in a religious institution, he or she should realize that the Supreme Lord is the actual maintainer. If we live simply engaging in Krishna's service and not creating unnecessary demands, we will be able to reduce concerns for maintenance and enter the spirit of yoga, kshema, and chajati, as mentioned by Narada Muni. And your love for Krishna will increase because you'll feel his kindness in the sense that you'll realize that what you have is being given and maintained by him. And when you over-endeavor, then because it's the conception that your doership, your agency, your ego has acquired things, then you will be responsible to preserve them. And if you do,
then you'll feel that's my power. But you won't feel the kindness of God who is actually doing it. But if you put yourself in a situation of dependence on God, then the things you have, you'll feel as his love. And the things you keep, you will feel as his love. So here in the Narada Bhakti Sutra, in terms of attaining bhakti, all these different conceptions are given of how to cultivate surrender. And we're going to discuss a few more. And then the conclusion was, that person will cross illusion. He'll cross Maya. And what's Maya? Maya is the illusion that things are separate from God and that they're for my enjoyment and that I am controlling them. And therefore, I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And that conception, which is temporary, is always fraught with duality and fear, because that temporary conception you cannot maintain. It's an artificial thing. It's just like if you lie, right? And then you have to protect yourself. You have to lie and lie and lie. It's a big endeavor. If you tell the truth, it's simple. Truth is simple. Truth is easy to maintain. And truth is eternal. So if you accept untruth, the body, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, it's something that will end because it has no basis. It's superficial. It's not eternal. It will end. And therefore, your conception of yourself and the things you're attached to will end. It's completely fraught with anxiety. So that's the illusion, and you have to cross it. And you can cross it. Even now, it's saying here, you have some desire, some conception. Come to spiritual life. How can I cross it? How you can cross it. If you start cultivating the consciousness of Sharanagata, the dependence on God. And these are some of the ways how one in Krishna consciousness will do it. Okay, are there any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Gail here.
Hi, Krishna Gail. Yes?
Well, I have an ill-formed question, but I wanted to say first that I thought it was interesting that someone who was going to give lecture in Tawako on Sunday, they asked me what verse they should speak on, and I said you should do 9:22 in the Gita, you know. And it turned out to be too heavy for them, you know, and so they decided to do something very light. You know, so I guess Krishna wanted me to wait for you.
Why is it too heavy?
I don't know.
Why should that be too heavy?
I think maybe they didn't have enough time to prepare because they had to prepare practically the same day, actually, just hours before the Sunday feast. So.
Okay. It was one of the congregation people.
Yeah. Yeah. Madan Gopal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, my ill-formed question was, you know, when you were talking about the fact that we won't be able to overcome the modes unless, you know, we surrender. I know something about that when you were talking about that. I don't know, maybe I just want you to elaborate. Because
well,
you see, the thing is that Krishna wants us to come to him. So I would think that he would support any endeavor that we make in that regard. Why would he, deny or?
Because he's not denying. It's simple as this.
Krishna Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Ekobahanam Yogadati Sakam. There's one supreme eternal, there's many eternals. There's one living force, there's many living forces. The one supports the many. So he fills your desire. So if you want to be independent, which means you want to be the controller and enjoyer, something which you cannot have by your constitution, then God fulfills your desire by putting you in Maya. The Maya is connected with your desire not to be what you are, which is a devotee of Krishna. So when you surrender to Krishna, which means I want to be a devotee of Krishna, I actually want truth. I want to embrace the truth. And what's the truth? There is a God who's the controller and enjoyer, and we are God's servants. So when you embrace that truth, Gail, when one embraces that truth, then the illusion is dissipated because God is giving you that illusion according to your desire. If you don't have the desire to be an illusion, then you're free from it. And that's surrender. The illusion is we're independent. The truth is we're part of God. And when you surrender to that, surrender to God as the shelter, God as the supreme, and therefore his desire, which is universal, is the desire that should be fulfilled. That's surrender. You're surrendering to what? You're surrendering to the desire and will of something else. So when you want, that's the way things are. If you want that, then you'll see that. And if you don't, you'll be an illusion.
Okay,
thank you, Gail. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you think that man will be
thinking. Who is this?
Amiya.
Thank you so much for
coming.
Well, thank you. Really wonderful to hear from you and pray you're well. And I'll be back in about a month in America. Anybody else like to say hello?
To
I'll come right over. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end now. Bunch of culture, the previous chapter, the same review.